Hello, my name is Peter Dunn, and my job today is to welcome you all to this podcast and to welcome David Bradley to the University of Warwick and to congratulate him on his honorary degree. He seems to be never off our TVs or our films or on stage. And in Shakespeare alone, he's played kings, gardeners, fools. He's played policemen, he's played madmen, he's played murder suspects on our TV. He's played a gun-tooting farmer. He's been two different West Country fishermen and a feckless father. Oh, and one or two of you might have seen him as a certain character in some movies about a boy wizard that I believe are reasonably popular. So David Warwick, as you know, is one of the UK's top 10 research universities. But I rather suspect that more important factors in you deciding to accept your honorary degree is the fact that the university's arts centre being here, one of the where you're graduating from, which you know well. And I think it's also the fact that Warwick is the nearest the university campus to Stratford, which is now your home.
That's right. We've been in Stratford now for, well, almost 30 years. I first came up with the RSC in 1978. And as long as I can remember, I've been coming here because they've always had a very adventurous artistic policy in the theatre and in the film and in the concert hall. And it's always been something. We've been on the mailing list for many years, and we get here whenever we can. And it's been it's great. It's perfect and very close by because... As you know, there's not much culture in Stratford. No theatre.
I believe there's a minor competitor, isn't there?
yeah, a little fringe hut.
But as well as that minor competitor, I believe there's also a community theatre group in Stratford that you're involved with, or indeed lead.
That's right, Second Thoughts. And I went to see one or two of their shows many years ago now, and they asked me to be their president. And nobody had asked me to be a president before, so... I was always very impressed by the quality of the performances there, and I get to see the shows whenever I can, which is not always because I'm working away from home a lot, but I'm still very much in contact with them. So,
And of course, this honorary degree here at Warwick is just the latest in a long list of awards for you. And your many other accolades is the Laurence Olivier Award in 1991 for the supporting actor role as the Fool in King Lear at the Royal National Theatre. You've had three other nominations for Laurence Olivier. And I guess the name Laurence Olivier resonates with you particularly because on top of these awards, you started your acting career in the Laurence Olivier National Theatre in 71.
Yes, in fact, seeing Laurence Olivier in the film of Richard III, at some point I think it was in the 60s, was my first experience of seeing Shakespeare anywhere, either on stage or screen. We weren't a family of theatre-goers, but I saw him in that film, and I found him frightening and funny, and it was my first exposure to Shakespeare, and kind of what got me into it, because he was so real and scary, as I said, and... To actually audition for him was even scarier than watching the film, but he somehow let me in, and he's quite a good mentor and a good boss, and he encouraged me and gave me some nice parts to play in the 2 years that I was there before he left the National and Peter Hall took over, and so he was always an inspirational actor, and I had the pleasure of seeing him on stage quite a few times, and I had the pleasure of sharing a stage with him a couple of times as well. So that was just, for me, that was because he was always my hero, and I always considered him the greatest actor I ever saw.
Yeah. And to then get the award that bears his name and to be nominated at Theatre Times must have been particularly pleasurable.
Absolutely, yes. And unfortunately, he'd passed on by the time I got it, but I like to think he'd have been pleased for me.
I'm sure he was. And obviously it was for the Fool in Lear, and sticking with Shakespeare for the moment. You've seemed to be a director's dream as far as Shakespeare is concerned, because you seem to bring magic to every acting role within the Shakespeare plays. You've been king, such as Henry IV. You've been the wise gardener in the latest BBC version of Richard II. You've been a novel and a very funny ventriloquist version of Trinculo, which I had the joy of seeing myself in The Tempest, which is amazing. I never imagined Trinculo as a ventriloquist. That was stunning. you've obviously been the Fool in Lear as well, but you've also had the horror, and I've seen this as well, unfortunately, of having your eyes gouged out as Gloucester in Lear.
Yes.
And you've even been, and I won't go and see, it's one Shakespeare play I won't go and see, is you've been in the title role of the non-stop horror that is Titus Andronicus. You know, have you actively sought out such a rich variety of Shakespeare, or has it just happened?
If I could have planned my career in that way, I would have pretty much said that's what I want to do. But I can't say it happened that way. It's just down to very adventurous directors who've taken a chance and said, I mean, for example, when I did Shallow in Henry IV, parts 1 and 2 with Robert Stevens, Falstaff, in 92, I think, Nick Heitner got in touch with me about 7 years ago and said, I saw you play Justice Shallow in Henry IV. I thought you might like to have a go at the King this time. And it was like that. And I thought, well, that's great, because it's a director showing a bit of adventurousness and imagination. And so I've been fortunate in the directors I've worked with who, again, like Sam Mendes, just throwing Trinculo at me and suggesting I do it as a ventriloquist.
That was Sam Mendes' idea, yes. Is right?
Sam said it was my idea, the ventriloquism, but I think it was his. I have to give it to him. But
such a good idea, I think it's yours.
Yes, well, it was a great idea, and I had an awful lot of fun with the dummy. I've still got the dummy in my attic. And,
brilliant.
Which, when I think about it, it's a bit spooky, isn't it, when you think I've got a dummy in a box
above yourself.
Where you're sleeping. Of yourself, yes, yes. An identical...
I think you've probably been to movies for the same thing, really. But, as you say, you received an award for your work as a fool in Lear, and we're just talking about you managed to combine tragedy and comedy in Lear. And you seem to have done much the same in TV, and in particularly combined comedy and tragedy in a way which seems to stand out. I'm thinking of that series where you were the head of the family in The Wilsons in Channel 4, which was stunning.
Yeah, yeah.
Years before Shameless, and doing it so much better than Shameless, frankly.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you were the Cornish fisherman, old Jake, in The Wild West. Mm. You were the dying Stan Garvey and Benidorm again, tragedy and comedy together. Mm. I just turned TV on by accident one day, and I'd never seen Benidorm in my life before, and I had to watch you for the next 5 minutes of Stan Garvey. Yeah. Then you were the cult figure of the gun-hoarding farmer, Arthur Webley. He was even named after a gun, in Hot Fuzz. Is that the sort of comedy role that particularly attracts you, the sort of the tragic comedy, or is that just an accident, or is that just something you've become known for?
Well, I think in all great writing, whether it's for stage or screen, and particularly applies to Shakespeare, that's built in, that tragic comic sense, and even characters like Andrew Aguecheek, who I played, and the fool in Lear, even Trinculo, he's a sad geezer in many ways, and even though he's funny, he doesn't think he's funny, but and like all those great characters, they don't find themselves amusing, although they don't think they're funny, but they have that duality that makes them richer as human beings, and I think all great drama is tragicomic, even a play like King Lear. But basically, you could say they're tragic plays, but and even Titus Andronicus, there were some comic moments in that which we discovered. And it's all there just to be mined, really, between you and the director to find those contrasts and opposites and the contradictions in a character that is what human beings are, after all, made up of. You know, we're all full of...
It does seem to be a particular talent for you, both on Shakespeare on stage and on TV. Almost all your comedy parts has a hint of tragedy to it, which you weave into it so well.
Yeah.
Thank you. And you've done so many things, it's easy to extract themes from them. And one other theme I'd like to look at is, goes right back again to your early career, and your very first television appearance in 1971, when you played a police officer in the comedy Nearest and Dearest.
Yes.
And since then, you've been an array of police officers, or villains, or murder suspects, or fences. It's almost cops, robbers, murder does follow you around. You've been in Between the Lines, you've been in Ashes to Ashes, and Midsummer Murders, Band of Gold, Thieves Like Us, and Wycliffe and Cracker. Most actors say the villain is usually much more fun than the policeman, unless the policeman's a villain. But what have you found?
Yes, well, it's that old saying, the devil has the best tunes, and I think a lot of actors, well, certainly I do, find virtue as a major characteristic of someone quite hard to do, because somehow I don't quite believe it. I always think there's something underneath, or the weasel under the cocktail cabinet, as Harold Pinter called it. So you always try and find that side of it. I also seem to to be popping my clogs a lot in things. And my daughter said at one point, "Dad, why are you always dying?" When she was a little girl, you know.
Because yeah, it's hard to get to sequels when you die, isn't it?
Because yes. And I did play a lot of quite dark characters, and people would meet me and say, "Oh, you're quite nice, aren't you? I've never seen you smile before." And I think, "My God, what have they been seeing?" And but more lately, I've been fortunate in playing a lot more comedy roles. I've just finished a series called Mount Pleasant for Sky up in Manchester.
I saw that. Yeah,
and again with Hot Fuzz and parts like that, it's becoming a bit more bit more fun. I'm starting to have a bit more fun with characters. So.
But you even die as a good guy, don't you? I was on a plane and just picked a movie at random to watch. I said to Captain America, I said, "It's David Bradley, and he's getting killed again as a good guy."
Yes, after I'd taken all the trouble to learn a bit of Norwegian, they shoot me through the chest.
Yeah.
So, but that was a nice little cameo. I enjoyed doing that.
I wasn't expecting it. So it was brilliant to see you on that. Yeah, and one, not the last question, but perhaps the last theme. Of course, you know, in recent days, you're widely known as a Hogwarts character in Argus Filch in the Harry Potter films. But it's not the only fantasy or science fiction universe you've visited. You could mention your role in Terry Pratchett's Discworld as Conan the Barbarian.
Yes.
It's a parody of Robert E. Howard's Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones, I understand, you've just appeared on.
Yes.
Captain America, you've just mentioned, sort of whole Marvel universe. But I rather suspect that the next science fiction universe where you're going to get bombarded with the attention of a lot of fans is Doctor Who.
That's right. You've
been in it twice now. You've been a sentient, vulture-shaped, intergalactic undertaker. You're about to appear again as a character who we now know is called Solomon.
Yes.
And it's just been revealed in the last few days. It's an episode called Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
Yes.
And all that else we've seen is you appear to have two very big robot friends. Is there anything else you could tell us at this stage about Solomon without giving away too many spoilers about the plot?
I'm actually not sure. I wasn't briefed as to what I could say, but they just said don't give away any plot.
You just
have to be generally wary of saying too much. So I tend not to say very much about it. But he's actually a space pirate who we've kind of modelled on a well-known nightclub owner with long hair, and but he has lots of scars, and he wears head to foot in black leather. He's a bit of like an old rocker space pirate who runs a ship the size of Canada, and he has two giant robots who are a bit rusty, and he got them both. I think he got them two for one.
Two for price of one is a bog off offer
at some robot convention or something.
I think you've said enough for it to be interesting to the fans.
Upsetting
Stephen Moffat.
Yes, but yeah, I have to say it was just great working with Matt. Yeah. He's a terrific actor and a lovely guy, and we had a lot of fun together. So, it was a great part.
Because you probably didn't meet him the first time, because it was a voiceover part. The first
me in the studio
exactly.
In Cardiff.
Yeah, it's hard to be actually dressed up as a giant vulture.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure what you've said there alone will be enough to excite the fans. They'll be all over those comments alone. So people will have their own very favourite different moments in your performances, and have been so many. And for many folk, of course, it'll be Argus Filch. That'll be the way that they've encountered you. And for me, it was your Trinket on a Tempest, as we were discussing earlier. The other one I would set equal to that is that great moment, that sort of tear-jerking death scene of poor old Eddie Wells, who was the only nice person in our friends in the North, who sort of dies, has a heart attack, with all the papers swirling around him.
Yeah.
So those are my favourites. But you must have your own favourite moments or favourite characters.
Yes, well, there are so many, but they're all linked with not only with the work, but with the friends I made on the job, like playing the fool in Lear, and just touring the world with Brian Cox and Ian McKellen leading this great company, and we went to so many interesting places with it, and it was just one of those experiences, as well as playing a great part, and I. As well as playing the fool, I understudied Brian Cox as Lear, and he was ill one performance at Nottingham Theatre Royal, and I went on as King Lear. So
I never knew that.
It was a one night one off, and I never got to do it again. And it was just a great experience, but it was all a blur. I can't remember a thing about it. But
I'm sure the audience did.
Well, I got a good reception because you do if you're an understudy and you don't forget the words and the costume fits and you're sailing.
Yeah.
So I got away with it.
but there can be very few people at that level who've played the fool and got an award for it, who've played Lear and played Gloucester, and for all I know, many other various parts
I've
of
played,
Lear.
Albany with, yes. With Michael Gambon as Lear in 1982, yeah. So I'm quite familiar with that play, and it happens to be my favourite Shakespeare tragedy.
Could
so.
Be a one-man Bradley Lear at this
Yes, I could.
I look forward to it. And finally, the very last question. We ask this of all our honorary graduates. Is there one piece of advice you'd give to your fellow graduates that are with you in the ceremony today?
Well, I would just say be yourself and stick to your guns and follow what you want to do. And if you've got a talent for anything, don't just rely on it, but work on it as well, and it'll go far.
Yeah. That's great advice, and clearly if they follow it and achieve a quarter of what you've done, they'll achieve an immense amount.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you.